It's appropriate this Halloween week to talk about a weather event. It was a little scary and it rocked the upper Midwest. It was the Great Halloween Snowstorm of 1991, but it was part of a larger, potent weather system that we'll delve into during this edition of Jet Streaming. Trick-or-treaters donned snowmobile suits on Halloween of 1991 across parts of Minnesota, the Dakotas, and Wisconsin. Ice was the big problem in Iowa. That storm was memorable, and we thought it might be nice to look back at what happened and why and what the damage was. Joining me, as always, Dr. Mark Seeley from the University of Minnesota and Paul Huttner from Minnesota Public Radio, chief meteorologist. How are you guys doing?
Just fine, Kathy. That storm's still vivid in my memory.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody else that I know remembers that storm around these parts. It's one of those landmark weather moments for Minnesota.
So where were you guys working at the time? I remember, 1991. I was at Minnesota Public Radio. Mm-hmm. I was a program host doing something a little different than I'm doing now. But I was still here. Where were you?
I was at the University of Minnesota on the St. Paul campus. And one of the rare times that the university's closed due to weather, although on Halloween itself, we were open because, as you know, the storm started during the afternoon.
Yes.
And went on through Halloween evening. But the next day was just probably one of the most challenging days in my memory.
Mm, we'll ask about that. Paul Huttner, where were you?
And I was a junior forecaster at WCCO Television, working the entire storm from before the storm, looking at all the computers in disbelief, to watching it happen and actually ending up being the only anchor to make it into the television station that morning of November 1st.
Well, lucky you.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, let's set up the storm system itself. What was brewing and where was it?
Well, interesting to note in this storm, this was really a remarkable historic weather week in the United States, not just in the Midwest. You may remember that this was the same week that what's called the perfect storm sunk the Andrea Gale off of the coast of New England. And what we had going on was what we call a huge full latitude long wave low pressure trough anchored over the western U.S. And it stretched really from Baffin Island all the way down to Mexico. So this was a very deep trough over the western U.S. And this incredibly what we call high amplitude pattern, just perfect for the setup for this great Halloween megastorm. And the low pressure at the surface formed down around Galveston, Texas, early on the morning of October 31st, which was Halloween. And then it began to track to the northeast. It was around Lamoni in southeast Iowa 24 hours later, 7 a.m. on November 1st, and then to near Thunder Bay, Ontario, 7 a.m. on November 2nd. So this thing really wound up. It was able to pull in all kinds of Gulf moisture. And the setup was just perfect because cold air had already invaded Minnesota. So we had this cold dome near the surface, all this warm moist air riding over the top, what we call overrunning. This was a perfect setup for heavy snow. And it was what we call a Gulf storm, which is the real heavy, wet kind of snow that we get here in the upper Midwest.
Paul, I also remember this storm for its longevity. If I'm not mistaken, we had, once the storm initiated about 1 o'clock in the afternoon local time here in the Twin Cities on Halloween, we had 66 hours. 66
yeah.
hours of snow.
That's right.
Which is, that's a long, that really tests the stamina. I don't know how many times the average everyday homeowner must have shoveled this snow, but you kept thinking maybe it was going to abate and let up, and so, you know, you'd go out and try to clear some of it, but it just kept coming and coming.
When did forecasters figure out this was a biggie?
We knew in the days before that this was going to be a big storm. It was evident. How big was the big question? And I remember in the weather department at WCCO, we were looking at the computer models and what's called the QPF, the quantitative precipitation forecast. And in hindsight, I think the computers did a reasonably good job of estimating the storm track, the intensity of the storm, and the precipitation amounts. But I remember us looking, the staff that day at WCCO, about the models putting out over 2 inches of liquid precip. And we're looking at each other kind of in disbelief. At a 10-to-1 ratio, that would have meant over 20 inches of snow. And, you know, forecasters, we're a little skeptical sometimes at these big weather systems, that would they be capable of producing that much? Because for a snowstorm to come together and produce that kind of snow, everything has to be just right. If one parameter is wrong, if a little layer of warm air works in at, say, 5,000 feet and changes some of it over to liquid, you're not going to get that heavy snow amount. But we kind of laughed it off. But if memory serves, the night before, we had a forecast of about 6 to 12 inches plus of heavy, wet snow.
And that would have been on the 30th of October that you were forecasting that?
That would have been actually on, yes. That would have been on Halloween.
Okay, itself.
On Halloween Day.
Okay. Exactly. It's hard to remember dates and that kind of thing.
16 years ago.
I know. I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning, much less 16 years ago.
That's right.
So from where you stood, Mark, and your colleagues, both your colleagues here in the National Weather Service, I mean, what were you hearing?
Well, to be honest with you, we were just thinking that this was going to be certainly a significant storm, but so early for such a mammoth snow that I don't think any of us were thinking, well, maybe we'd get a little bit of snow, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But also we were thinking that this would pass by, you know, we might have a difficult maybe 24 to 36 hours, but then this would pass by and the weekend wouldn't be too bad, you know, and stuff like that. Well, this thing initiated at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on October 31st and didn't really abate till 8 o'clock in the morning on November 3rd.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was amazing.
So it was totally unexpected in duration as well as intensity. And Paul's described the intensity parameters of this storm very well. It left a swath that was unprecedented in terms of snowfall amounts, 28.4 inches here in the Twin Cities, and then, of course, the mammoth 36.9 inches up in Duluth. And the east central part of the state was just absolutely paralyzed, Kathy. This was a paralyzing storm in every sense of the word, because there was no going about doing anything reasonable at all with this storm. And if I'm not mistaken, all the highways, the airport, we had power problems. We had all kinds of problems with this storm that lasted for quite some time.
And if I recall, I think folks in Iowa still consider that ice storm, because it was ice in Iowa, if I recall, to be the worst in Iowa history.
Right.
I know I-35 was closed, and they had, 80,000 homes without power, $6 million in utility damage because the poles went over. And I think crops were still in the field, and they had millions of dollars in crop damage, too, in Iowa because of this.
That's
ice.
Right. That's right. It had been a wet fall, so harvesting was delayed. So mm-hmm. We still had farmers out trying to harvest.
And I think, then Governor Terry Branstad declared, 52 out of 99 mm-hmm. Iowa counties disaster areas. Yeah. I mean, it was really a major storm.
Well, and folks here may remember, too, that the ground was warm before the onset of the storm. So the first couple of inches of snow melted and then refroze underneath the weight of all the other snow and the cold air and compacted into this inch or two thick layer of ice that they could not get off the roads. The road crews were not able to remove this stuff for at least a week, maybe a couple
hideous.
Of weeks. Remember the washboard driving around, even on the freeways around the Twin Cities. So it was remarkable in that sense as well from a traffic standpoint. And Mark, you are so right about the transportation situation. It was literally, it was gridlock. Downtown Minneapolis was like a ghost town that morning. We were on the air for about 6 hours straight, almost continuously. And buses were stranded on the side of the road. Folks had to abandon buses and then try to find their way to their destination. The Minnesota State Patrol, I'll never forget this moment, came on with us doing what we call a phoner live in the middle of that morning, maybe around 9:30 or 10 o'clock. And I remember the guy saying, you know, I'm asking him, what are you telling people who are maybe stuck at home or on their way to work or trying to get to work? And he simply said, we are recommending that there's absolutely no travel. Don't try to travel today. Stay home. Now, we don't tell Minnesotans to stay home. We don't do that very often.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember the collective kind of sigh of relief in the city at that moment when everybody just said, you know what, this is too big for us to handle. We're staying home.
That was by far the best thing to do.
Oh,
that
absolutely.
Storm, the best thing to do for that whole duration was just stay put.
What did it look like on the St. Paul campus of the U of M? Because you rarely close, as you said earlier.
That's right. Well, we were closed November 1st, as Paul said, because transportation essentially had been brought to a standstill. Now, I had the short straw, you might say. I live close to the campus, and we then were taking manual observations. We did not have automated systems that would automatically measure everything at the St. Paul Campus Observatory. So I had the duty on November 1st. It took me 2 hours to walk the 1 mile distance from my home to the campus. Then once on campus, I went into the laboratory and pulled down a pair of snowshoes hanging on the wall and thought, this will help me get out to the observatory, normally a 10-minute walk, Kathy. It took me the better part of an hour, and I could not see where I was going because we had 40-mile-an-hour winds. That particular day, there was about 19 inches of snow falling, and so I was just navigating based on memory, you know, kind of just, okay, I think it's out this way.
Well, you could have fallen in a snowbank and got lost and not be
found
until spring.
Well, you see, I was a younger man back then, and I probably had the testosterone genes working a little bit,
right.
You know. I'm going to do this no matter what. So I finally made it out there, opened the gate, walked into the observatory, only to see that every instrument we had was completely buried in mountains of snow. And by the way, this included the instrument shelter that houses the thermometers to take the daily high and low temperature.
And that's 5 feet above the ground.
That's right.
Right.
So I took a snow shovel and I carved a path back to it. Then I started digging it out. And once I got it dug out, I could get down and I opened the door and I looked at the thermometers. And as I wrote down the observation, I was thinking to myself, oh, indeed, this certainly represents the air maximum minimum temperature
with all the snow
for
on
the
it.
Last 24 hours. I did write down in the, each observation booklet besides your readings off the instruments, you have a comment section.
Ah.
The comment section on the weather form to this date, I wrote, unbelievable snow and wind, blizzard-like conditions. What am I doing out here?
That's fantastic.
I don't remember, you know what, here this goes amnesia. I know I was on the air on November 1.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I got here. I don't remember. I'm sure somehow, after realizing it was going to be bad, I probably skated in somehow down I-94 to get on the air.
Yeah.
Because we had, of course, wall-to-wall coverage. It was the only thing anyone was talking about.
Mm-hmm. And I remember, Kathy, the night before on Halloween, WCCO did not have a morning newscast then. So they decided to have me come in and do a few weather cut-ins starting at around 5 a.m. And when I went to bed that night, it was already snowing to beat the band. When I woke up at 3:15 in the morning, there was already 15 inches of snow in my driveway. And I had to back out my driveway 3 times to create a path and then got onto the road, put the car in forward, and just plowed all the way down 394, not daring to stop, and finally just piled up on a snowbank in a parking lot about a block from work.
Wow.
And I was the only one to get into the station there, and we began doing cut-ins around 5 a.m. And just before 7 a.m., my news director called and said, Paul, you're the only anchor at this TV station who can make it in this morning. I want you to turn us into the Weather Channel. I want you to go on the air and stay on the air as long as you can.
Did you have any backup to help you?
I did. We
okay.
had John Lansing, an assistant news director, made it in at the time. Trish Van Pilsum, who was one of our reporters at the time, made it in, and she did some live reports for the Nicollet Mall. There were people cross-country skiing down the middle of the Nicollet Mall that day. Buses were not moving. The whole city was shut down. It was really amazing. So we were nearly in continuous coverage from around 7 a.m. up through noon that day. And it was a big day for the TV station. They did a 40 share that we call it in the business. And
captive audience.
That's right. Told me the next day, you're the only person in the history of the station with their own 40 share. Of course, it was all the storm. It was just the luck of the draw that I was there. But it was really a remarkable day for the city and the state.
You know, Mark Seeley, What happened after? Does anyone remember what happened after it left here? I mean, I was the East Coast obviously was whacked.
Well, it did. It did. It did cross other portions of the American landscape, but I think we bore the brunt. Mm. We truly in our area bore the brunt of the maximum intensity of this storm. Now, Arctic high pressure settled in afterwards, and we went down to -3 here on the morning of November 4th. Minus values, below zero values were all over the place and obliterated the record for the earliest such readings in the fall season. So that Arctic high pressure system that followed in behind this storm was quite cold. We had a very cold series of days, and then we also ended up that month with 46.9 inches of snow for the month of November, which also obliterated the monthly record for November.
Then how's this, the 91 Halloween blizzard, stack up against other big storms?
Well, it's by far the heaviest total snowstorm for many communities in eastern Minnesota. Bear in mind, those Minnesotans that live in the western part of the states, this storm is not quite so memorable. But I would say, in terms of maximum intensity, the 3 inches per hour snow deposition rate measured during the storm at the airport rivals the very famous Armistice Day storm of 1940 that also brought a deposition of 3 inches per hour, which when it's snowing that hard, Kathy, it makes it very difficult. You may be able to find yourself going, as Paul did, to the TV station, but as snow is accumulating so rapidly, by the time you've spent a few hours, holy smokes, I mean, you're not going anywhere after that because the snow is accumulating at such a rapid rate.
Well, you can't clear it out.
The road crews simply could not keep up with it. And, you know, interesting to note, too, Mark, because I did some digging back. There are three main types of snowstorms that we are used to in the upper Midwest that kind of have names. There's the Alberta Clipper, which we're all familiar with, fast-moving storms from the Canadian province of Alberta, usually producing dry, powdery 1 to 3 inches of snow. Snow-to-water content often 15-to-1 or higher with those storms. I did some looking back at the Armistice Day storm. A lot of folks were calling that a panhandle hook storm. Those are storms that form in the Texas-Oklahoma panhandle, then track northeast, 6 to 12 or more inches of snow, water content 10-to-1 snow-to-water ratio. And then these Gulf storms, and the Halloween megastorm was a Gulf storm. The surface wave was down around Galveston and then tracked almost north-northeast. And these can be our heaviest, wettest snows. Snow amounts can exceed a foot. Snow-to-water content on the order of 8-to-1 or so, maybe even 7-to-1, as Mark said, maybe in the Halloween megastorm.
Wow. You know, a lasting image of all the images, for me, personally, was answering the door Halloween, and we had very few kids that showed up. Mm-hmm. One little witch in her little peaked hat was all full of snow, and she had this forlorn look on her face, and I looked at her and said, "Oh, honey, here, take all of the candy.
It's all yours.
And then go home, please. You shouldn't be out here."
Yeah, her lucky day. She filled her whole bag in about 5 minutes. You're very kind.
Oh, my goodness. Will we see anything like this, do you suppose, down the line, somewhere along the line? Of course, who knows, you know. But
right. I mean, it's not logical to think that a forecaster would see something like this to forecast. It's such an extreme aberration. It's surely... I'll say this, but it's probably a once-in-a-lifetime.
You watch now.
Literally.
Sometime.
I've jinxed it. I've jinxed everybody in this room.
Well, we have run out of time on this, but before we go, how about a weather website of the week? I actually heard thunder that... I remember
yes,
that.
Yes, thunder snow.
Thunder snow. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, I have this one, the weather website of the week, and it's really quite interesting. It kind of dovetails into what we're talking about here, and I like the concept of this. And teachers who are listening to Jet Streaming, maybe this is something you can try. It is called Wisconsin Weather Stories, and it began in May of 2003 when 5 Wisconsin K-12 classroom teachers worked with folklorists and meteorologists on the science and stories of Wisconsin weather. And the team collected local stories and weather data to create a classroom curriculum. And one of the stories on the site is an interview that a student in Poplar, Wisconsin did with her dad about driving in that Halloween blizzard of 91. The site, check it out. I like the concept. It's kind of cool. Is weatherstories.ssec.wisc.edu. And we'll put it on Just Streaming's website, too, just so you can
Sounds fascinating.
I like the, again, getting kids together and collecting. I like the folklorists collecting some of these stories.
Everybody that I run into has a weather story. They remember that big storm. They remember the one when they were a kid. And it's, for some folks like us, the driving force in our life and our careers. So this is a fantastic mesh of that folklore and science.
Yeah, I like it. I could see it being done in other states, so check it out. I don't know about you guys, but I'm masquerading as a forecaster for Halloween. How about you?
I'm going with the Will Steiger Arctic Explorer costume this
year. Excellent. That'll be very good. Well, happy Halloween, both of you, and enjoy the rest of the week.
You too, Kathy.
Thanks, Kathy.
This has been Jet Streaming, produced by Minnesota Public Radio with the help of Sarah Fleener. I'm Kathy Werzer. Until next week, remember to keep your eyes on the sky. Keep on.